Welcome to Dan Malloy's Personal Power Blueprint Podcast. Get ready to up your communication and commitment game. Hear from those who have succeeded using Dan's program. And now, here's Dan Malloy.
Hey guys, how are you? Uncle Dan here. Actually, Grandpa Dan now, because I have a new, brand new baby granddaughter, but it's hard for me to shake the Uncle Dan moniker, so I'm not going to. Anyway, hey, listen, I want to talk today about commitment and how I discovered the whole world of commitment and how it's how it's really become such a big part of my life and my teaching and what I measure for companies and everything. So because understanding how to become a commitment-based organization, how do you do that if you have a company, you're running a company? How do you become a commitment-based organization? And why would you even want to do that is an important question. And the other thing, as a human being, you know, why would you want to become a commitment-based human being? You know, and I think the way to express that or share about that is just to tell a little bit about my own journey, which you'll be able to read about in my book coming out, which will be coming out soon. I've written it. It's in editing. The title of the book is Blueprint for Personal Power. And but right now, I just want to share with you all that, you know, when I was a young man, life was good, but it was tough for me because I didn't really understand how to communicate that well. And my dad was a smart guy, a civil engineer, a brilliant guy when it came to book smarts and being an engineer and putting up buildings and all that. Not a great communicator. Same thing with my mom. Wonderful. Valedictorian of her high school class, but not a great communicator. As a matter of fact, I look back on my life now. I went to good schools and everything, and they taught me how to read, but not how to communicate. Right, so by the time I get into high school and out of that into college and married my college sweetheart and everything, for 4.5 years we were married, it didn't go well, and we ended up splitting up. So that was a big, big, big breakdown for me in my life. On the outside, it looked like I had everything. You know, I had a company. I started my first company when I was about 25, and it was growing, and I had a home improvement business. I had 4 trucks, and we had 4 crews that we would send out every day from a shop that we had, and it was on the outside, and we were making money. I mean, it was good, and it looked like I had everything. I had a beautiful young wife, and I had no idea how to communicate, how to listen to her, how to take care of her. In a particular way, you know, where it produced satisfaction. So anyway, we ended up splitting up. She left me for somebody else, and it was like devastating, you know. And so it was at that point, I was invited to go to a communication workshop in New York City, and I meet the instructor, comes out, and it's Hispanic guy by the name of Fernando Flores. And I had done some research on him beforehand. He was an interesting guy because – when he was a young man, he was the economics minister for the country of Chile. He was in the cabinet of Salvador Allende. Allende was his boss, was the president. He was a world-level thinker, Flores was. He was a philosopher, economist, and civil engineer. Actually, I use the word past was. He still is. I mean, the guy, he's still alive. I saw him about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, out in California. But anyway, so what happens is there's a military coup in Chile, and the armed services, the army comes in under General Pinochet, and they overthrow Salvador Allende government. They murder Allende, and they throw Flores in prison for 3 years. You want to overthrow a country, you should lock up all the intellectuals. That's the first step you should do. So anyway, Flores is in prison for 3 years. He's wrong place. He didn't do anything wrong. He was just in the wrong political party, right? And so Amnesty International comes and gets him out. But while he was in prison, he had networked with other intellectuals of the day, and they had come up with some ideas and some observations about communication, about commitment, about biology, and how biology and communication are all connected. So eventually he ended up writing books about the topic and all this. But he gets out of prison, goes to California, and becomes an educator and a businessman, a consultant. And I meet him, I guess it was probably about 4 years after he got out of, he was let out of prison. And I meet him, he's leading this workshop. So he comes out to lead the workshop, and he's very hard to understand because he speaks Spanglish, you know. And so I really had to sit on the edge of my chair and listen to this guy. But he said a few things that hooked me forever. One of the things that he said was that the only time commerce happens in any company, anywhere on the planet, is when there's an exchange of commitments that occurs between the provider of the service, whoever the company is, and their customer. The provider and the customer have to exchange commitments. That's what produces cha-ching in the cash register. And the money always shows up after the commitments have been exchanged. So really the most important part of commerce is, as I look at it now, is who's generating, who's causing the commitments to occur? You know, is it the customer? Sometimes customers call up and say, hey, I want to buy your product, and there's nothing you can do about it. I want to buy it today. Here's my credit card. And we've all done that. You walk into a computer store. You walk into a furniture store. You take out your credit card and say, I want to buy that couch, or I want to buy that computer. I want to buy those headphones. Whatever you're buying, you do it. And there's nothing that the company has to do. They just commit to provide the product at that point. You know, you commit, I want to buy it. They go, okay, good. That's the exchange of commitments. So anyway, you know, it's, you know, we fast forward. The other thing that Flores said that was a game changer for me, the commitment thing is huge. But the other thing is that in the world of communication, we can argue that every result in your business and in your personal life is tied to how you communicate, either effectively or ineffectively. Right? So in the whole world of communication, Flores goes on to say in Spanglish, and I had to do a double take when he said what I'm about to tell you, you know, because from my experience going through a divorce at the age of 27, 28 years of age, right, and leaving my business, getting out of my business, I was so depressed. Communication was very complex for me, and I wasn't good at it. And the result was I was suffering a lot. So Flores comes out and says, in the whole world of communication, there's only 6 possible moves anyone can make at any moment in time. And I'm like, what did he just say? 6 possible moves, what we call speech acts, that anyone can make at any moment in time. So the whole world of communication, you could say there's more than 1 million words now in the English language. So this is what we're talking about. What Flores is revealing to me for the first time, this was like 1980, 81 time frame. I was like 30, 31 years of age. And what he's revealing is that there's something called speech acts, which I didn't really know anything about prior to that. And there's only 6 speech acts which are literally responsible for everything on the planet. That the way I looked at it and the way he was explaining it to me was that in my whole life, my first 30 years, the only tools I had to create everything were these 6 moves in language. I didn't even know they existed. So how could I? It's like I didn't know what I didn't know. So I wasn't a very good communicator. I wasn't a good listener. I didn't understand anything about commitment, not really. I knew what my dad had taught me years before was just like do the right thing. That was his way of talking about commitment, which is important. I mean, so just do the right thing is important. But Flores was taking this to a whole another level. You know, what I saw out of working with Flores, my immediate thought process was if I can learn and become a master at these 6 moves in language, it's a game changer for me. So here I am nearly 40 years later still talking about it because it has been a game changer. So now we fast forward to the topic of this talk today, and we're going to bring a guest in here in a few minutes. Because when I became a partner in a company that had 104 auto repair and tire stores and 1,000 employees, with my background and my work with Flores, I studied with Flores for 6 years, so it's not like I took it very seriously. It was I didn't get a degree from a university. This was way more intense than any kind of graduate program I could have gotten involved in. 6 years of study with Flores on everything under the sun as it relates to communication. And there's so much more we can get into. But anyway, my point is now that I got involved with this company with 1,000 employees, and I got to see firsthand that that we were not a commitment-based organization. What, in fact, we were was an information-based organization, all about information, 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 information. And we exchanged tons of information with customers. People would call up and ask us all kinds of questions, and our ASC-certified master technicians would spend half an hour talking with people on how to help them fix their car and everything. But my point is there was no effort, no knowledge in the company about the whole idea of making commitments as being the key move. It just didn't exist, you know. And what I've learned, and we could talk about this. You know what I want to do is I want to take a little break right now, and I want to bring my guest in. This fella, I think you're really going to like. His name is Neil Mayer, and he's the CEO of a advertising agency. Neil was actually a client of mine 15 years ago, and then he went on to become a very successful advertising and marketing agency in North Carolina, and we're starting to do more business together. And I want to introduce him to you and have a nice discussion with him. So let's take a break right now, and then we'll come back to you in a minute.
Malloy Sales Development turns companies into commitment-based operations and their employees into commitment-based people, because commitment for human beings is the foundation for everything. And in business, it's mission critical, because the only time commerce happens in any company is when commitments are exchanged internally among employees and externally with customers and vendors. Visit us at www.malloysales.com.
Hello again. This is Uncle Dan. I'm back at you, and I'm back with you with my friend and colleague for many years, Mr. Neil Mayer. Neil is the president and CEO. Are you president? What is your title exactly, Neil, before I go tell him?
I like to think of myself as partner.
Partner. He's a partner in his company. Why don't you tell us about your company, Neil, and then we'll jump into this discussion about the role of commitment in business and in personal life.
Perfect. I have a marketing agency based here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we focus on working with tire dealers and auto repair shops, wheel dealers, and the automotive aftermarket. My background is a tire dealer and in auto repair, and over the years I got the opportunity to really explore my love for marketing. So in the years since, we've marketed for a whole wide range of industries, but the auto repair and tire business is where our love is.
Yeah, well, so you know, it's interesting.
That's our primary focus.
We met like 15 years ago, thereabouts, and you became one of my first clients 15, 16 years ago. I started Malloy Business Development Group. I call it now Malloy Sales Development Group, but in 2001, January 1st of 2001, we started officially, but then went full-time in May of 2003. So how many years is that? It's like 17 years. But you were one of the first.
Yeah, a long time.
Yeah, you were one of the first clients, and you were operating. You were an entrepreneur. I mean, tell me about your desire, you know, and what it was like for you when you first started your first company.
Well, I got really lucky early on and met the right people. I started life as a service advisor in a big single location repair shop. We were 17 bays and 23 employees.
Wow.
And when that was in the late 90s, and when I first joined up, you know, a busy Saturday, we might write 120 tickets.
Wow.
So,
yeah, you know, busy. Yeah.
It was. And over the following years, not only did I become a part of the company and get to go on and open a second location, but I also got to go through this transformation where we slowed the business down. We had to, because we were busy, but not making a lot of profit.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
In the years after that, we slowed it down and we started looking for help and looking for partners. And that's when you and I met.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting what you said, just, you know, go, 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 busy, 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 but you weren't making a lot of money, churning a lot of dollars, you know, and which is, I think, a common thing in business. You know, what I'm left with now, I've been doing this work, analyzing language and analyzing conversations, sales conversations inside companies for 21 years. And I think what you're speaking about is business being done on a transactional basis, right? So in versus being done with regard to a commitment to make sure that the customer's car is up to speed, no pun intended. That just came out of my mouth like that. But anyway, my point is that, you know, in this was what it was like in when I had the ProCare operation, 104 plus stores. We got up to over 120 stores at one point, right? And all transactional. So people would come to us and say, hey, how much is an alignment? How much is a brake job? Right? And our guys, our salespeople, service advisors, would quote a price. And if the customer liked the price, they would come in and we would do the alignment. And pretty much that would be that. So we churned lots of, like you say, lots of tickets, lots of work orders. And we did ultimately millions of dollars worth of business. Like, we were an $80 million company back then. That was 1998, which sounds like a lot, but we weren't making any money. Not really. You know, and I think a big part of that is because we didn't realize the commitment side of the business. We were operating on the transactional side. If a customer wants an oil change, you give them an oil change. But not much else.
That's right. And times were different then as well. Cars needed a lot more attention and maintenance and repair than they do today. And there was a rush because there was a line at the door when you opened in the mornings. And really all you had to do was good work and you'd be blessed with car count.
Right. Yes. Yes. But
those days changed and it really took a leap of faith.
What do you mean those days?
To do that.
What do you mean the days changed? Explain that to me.
Well, over time, as you know, brake pads started to last more than 25,000 miles and you know, as vehicles became more dependable, we could see that path coming, but we also knew that there had to be a way to get our average repair order up. And the only way to increase our ARO was to slow down the car count. And again, it took a real leap of faith.
We say slow down the car count to slow down and spend more time with a customer, more time with their vehicle, more time to really look at the vehicle to make sure that you're doing everything that needs to be done to make sure that vehicle is operating the right way.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And you know, getting the time to do that required us to start using, you know, some scheduling tools and start to just shift the way the company operated. And in the meantime, we started to recognize the need. Now we actually need to work at this and be sure that when the phone rings, we're able to convert phone calls. And be sure that our loyal customers continue to come back to see us.
You know, one of the things, yes, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It was just going to say that the toughest thing was when that great customer walked in and something else was wrong and they'd just been in a week ago. And it was because they were in last week for front brakes, but this week now there's a problem with the rear brakes. And we never checked them. We were just in there, you know, to do what they asked us and get the car out because the parking lot was full.
Right.
So that mindset and that shift, we really had to commit to our customers and retrain them along the same lines that we were there to help them and make sure that when we had the vehicle, we would look it over. We would check it out. We'd tell them everything that needed to be done.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, I think, you say that, because what I've discovered over the last 4 or 5 year period is that the customers call up, and let's just say it's an existing, not it's a new customer, it was somebody that you've not worked with before in the business, and they have a problem with their car. I mean, let's just say, for argument's sake, that they got a check engine light on and their brakes aren't grinding like crazy, and they've got to go on a trip the next day to go on a business trip or go visit grandma, whatever. They're going on a long trip. So what I discovered is that customer at that moment in time is all alone. If they don't have a car guy, if they don't have a guy, you know, like Neil or like some of our other customers that we have, some of our clients, if they don't have a car guy that they can call their own, it's like being alone in the wilderness with surrounded by, you know, by wild beasts, you know, because you're really vulnerable at that point. And you can't live your life. I mean, if your car isn't functional or you're out there in the middle of Illinois or in Oklahoma or out in the woods of North Carolina, somewhere out in the country, and you don't have a working vehicle, you're up the creek without a paddle. You know, you really just can't live your life. And so it's at that moment of time. Well, the challenge, I think, that we run into is that the customers then call up. But they don't say that. A customer won't call you on the phone and say, "Hey, Neil, you know what? Listen, I'm really alone and I'm scared and I don't know what to do and I'm very vulnerable. If I come to see you, you could take total advantage of me. And oh, here's my American Express card." they don't do that. They play it coy. They're not going to admit that they're vulnerable and that their life is on hold. Really, most of them won't. If they know you, they will.
Dan, I'm sorry to interrupt you. One of the things that probably the biggest underestimation of my time in the repair business was just how inconvenient it can be to have your car serviced.
Yes.
Now that I don't have a shop, I have plenty of close friends and even clients who are here in our market. Who are always willing to help. Just the act of going through and dropping my car off, and God forbid if I have to leave it there for more than a day or two, it's incredibly inconvenient, and all I'm looking for is someone to solve that problem for me.
Yes, and that's where the commitment, this whole conversation comes down to this moment, I think, Neil, because what I've discovered through, you know, analyzing more than a million business conversations. And this is also true, not just in automotive, but in any industry, any company out there, when you've got a brand new prospective customer that's suffering, that's struggling, what they're looking for is a commitment from somebody to help them. That's ultimately what they don't ask for that. They don't call up and say, "Hey, Neil, can I trust you to repair my car?" They call up and ask for price. They ask for technical information, inventory amounts, whatever, to play it a little coy, and all the while that they're really at the mercy of what's going on, because they can't, if their car's not working, they're really stuck. Like you said, it's tremendously inconvenient, and they are just stuck. And the only thing that they're looking for is, at that point, somebody that just says, "Hey, Neil, I'm going to help you, my friend. My job is to become your car guy for life. And I'm going to take care of you. And we have a good prices." So I don't want to minimize the whole idea of price. It is important, you know, but it's never the number one issue. What do you think about that, Neil? My claim is commitment's the number one, and price is second, third, fourth, fifth down the list somewhere.
I agree wholeheartedly that commitment is the first thing that a prospective customer is looking for. And I think that price falls way down on that list. It is important, but really it comes down to value. I would be willing to pay more in order to solve my problem of convenience. Now, if I had an extra vehicle at home, my opinion might be different than that. And it certainly varies from market to market. But as long as I understand that you're going to take care of my problem, you're going to keep me updated and informed on the things that are going on today, but also my future needs with my car as well, and just be upfront and honest and provide the value I'm looking for out of that relationship,
right?
And I'll be loyal for life.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not that complex. You have to feel like you're part of a team, you know, that you can count on your auto repair and tire guy or your dentist or whoever it is. You know, I my dentist is great. I went to the dentist the other day. I had a problem with a wisdom tooth that broke. Old, because I'm old. I still have some original wisdom teeth in my head, and one of them just broke in half, right? But the tooth itself is good. But anyway, this guy, Bruce Schwartzman, what a great dentist. We laugh, and his customer service skills are monumental, and he's a great dentist on top of it all. But it's the same thing. You know, I called. The minute it broke, I was sitting in a restaurant. I go, oh, crap, you know, this isn't good. And so I called immediately, and then he had me in the next day and took care of it. Boom. But I know, my point is, I know who to call about a tooth issue. I have a guy. I have a dentist. I have my own car guys up here too. I got Ray and Tommy and Dave. You know, they run a very busy shop up here. But I have a guy. You know, and you're my advertising and marketing guy. You know, and that's how I look at you. You know, and hopefully I'm your language and communication guy. You know, for you. You know, and we need people like that in our lives. And so this whole thing comes full circle when you realize that in life that we have to surround ourselves with people that are committed to us, and that we are also committed to them. And it comes down to in my studied opinion, it's the exchange of commitments with other human beings that keep us all going. You know, any thoughts on that topic, Neil?
Well, when I think about my best relationships with other businesses and in commerce, they're almost all on a personal level.
Yes.
So I think when I think about my accountant or my attorney, my hairstylist, I think about.
Why did you bring up hairstyle? Why did you bring up hairstyle?
I have a little bit.
I actually have a hairstylist. I think, most people don't know that about me. I'm joking. I'm goofing on you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
that's a value proposition there, Dan. So I think that as you identify with those people, and it's a personal relationship. I trust those people. I've got a guy, and when I think about that relationship, the name of their firms, the name of their businesses, it comes secondary.
Right. Good point. Yes.
So in our discussions here, you know, you and I talked about our relationship together, but we've never identified that my agency, which is 3VE, that's kind of secondary to all of this, because you and I are the ones who have the relationship.
Yes.
And that same path was incredibly successful in the repair business. I still remember, you know, my best customers. I still see them in town, and that relationship transcended not just our business there, but it's followed me into other careers and, you know, other areas. And we're loyal to one another. And it's because there's that trust, that commitment and trust between us.
So what I've discovered, it's great. Go ahead. You want to make another point?
Just thinking that those principles it's not just auto repair. Those principles apply all the way through our businesses today.
Everything. everything. And, you know, and so for me, what I've discovered along the way of studying this stuff for almost 40 years now is that people need commitment as a customer. As a customer, you need someone that's going to make a commitment, regardless of whatever your breakdown or challenges in your life, whatever you're looking for, whether it be a dentist or, like you said, an accountant or an advertising agency or whatever it is. You need a commitment is number one. Pricing and everything is secondary. But from a sales perspective, from a business point of view, like you're as an owner-operator that we are, and as our clients, a lot of them in the automotive industry, the most important thing for them is to be able to articulate their commitment. Since commitment is the need for commitment on the customer side is number one, then what's number one on the provider side, the vendor side, is having the skill to articulate commitment in such a way that people go, yeah, that's what I want. You know, and that's to me, again, since I've been analyzing this and measuring this for almost 40 years and studying, I've been measuring it for 21 years since I got involved with the ProCare operation. But what I've discovered is that people don't know how in this day and age, in this digital age that we live in, they don't know how to articulate commitment. Not that simple. Not good at it, let me put it that way. Commitments are exchanged all the time in business because how do we know that? Because business is being done. Right. So you can have an order, but we also know in just using auto repair and tires as an example, that 50-60% of the time the customer calls up the business ready to roll. They make a commitment. You don't have to do anything. You just take down their name and number and they say, I'm coming in today for an oil change or I need to get my brakes looked at. And you don't have to do anything. And they're coming in. The growth where our clients are experiencing dramatic growth is where they say, okay, they are able to generate and cause a commitment to occur in such a way that the people that are just looking, just shopping, stop in their tracks and say, yes, that's what I'm looking for. Any thoughts there, Neil?
I think that when, as a service advisor, I field an inbound call and it's a price quote asking for a price on a repair or on a tire. 9 times out of 10, that's the only question that the caller knows to ask. The only way they know to try and qualify, can this shop take care of my needs? And as shop owners, it's our duty to then build a program internally to help that.
Hey, Neil, listen, I apologize. I want to interrupt you right now. We're going to go to a commercial break. And when we get back, I really want to talk about this whole idea that you just brought up about, you know, how you want to be the car guy, how that language, that making that commitment is so important in this day and age. And maybe we could discuss that topic. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right.
Dan Malloy's Personal Power Blueprint is a game changer. This podcast is designed to open the door to unlimited personal power by teaching you how to communicate more effectively and to sell more. It's based on a philosophy Dan developed called the language of commitment. Listen and subscribe at www.malloysales.com.
Hey guys, we're back. I'm here today. I'm thrilled to be speaking with my friend and colleague, Neil Mayer. And I want to just ask Neil this question and let him go on a rant a little bit about, as an advertising professional and marketing professional, what do you see, Neil, as the opportunity for your clients, given the work that we're doing together? In language and communication and how advertising and marketing is all about language and communication. What about the messaging of the commitment that a company is to be able to get that out to the masses, you know, how do you articulate that for a company? Let me better describe it like that. I don't know if that's clear.
The core requirement or the necessity or the opportunity in the marketplace is in differentiation and thinking about how I want my shops to stand out from the rest. What is there that I can say in my marketing? How can we answer the phone? How can we carry it through the customer experience? What things can we do there that are different? And building a competitive differentiator doesn't have to be complicated, but it needs to have a couple of qualities. One is that it needs to be hard to replicate. It needs to be something that the competition can't just easily copy. It also needs to be something that's true, and it needs to be impactful for your target market.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing commitment into this picture and bringing personality and the people behind the sign, the people behind the brand, the people that make your companies who they are, pulling all that together into that commitment process is a wonderful differentiator because it's unique and it meets the needs of the driving public.
I love what you're saying, and I think it really hits the nail right smack on the head because, again, like I said, in analyzing more than a million phone calls from business conversations, from around the country, all different clients, all different industries. You know, what I've observed is that the majority of the companies out there are hyper-focused on, not on commitment. They're hyper-focused on information and prices and technical information and all that kind of stuff. It has nothing to do with prices. I mean, it has nothing to do with commitment. So they're just focused on the wrong thing completely.
I agree. And in the marketing world, you look around, every shop out there professes to offer great service. Of course they do. They offer a full suite of, you know, we can work on all makes and models. Of course they can. What is it that a company can say that truly is different? And that is that we will take care of you and your vehicle and your problem, and we're your go-to, we're your resource, and you can rely on us.
And we're going to keep you in the game of life. We're going to keep you on the road so you can live your life no matter what. That's what we're going to do for you, that type of. But being able to articulate that clearly is the challenge.
To be able to articulate it in a manner that truly represents the company,
mm-hmm.
and the culture and the people inside the building. So it's not a bait and switch, but it is a true embodiment of the commitment.
Right. Yep.
I think that's the opportunity. I think that's sounds complicated, but ultimately is a pretty simple path forward to not only improve your relationships with your customers, to improve the lifetime relationship, the number of visits. You start to see average repair order increase in this process as well. And from a marketing standpoint, it becomes a lot easier. Because now, whenever we're marketing for one of our clients, we know what to say. We know what makes them special. We know what their secret sauce is. And that then informs all those steps as they move forward.
The challenge I've found over the years, the real challenge, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. It makes having this differentiator and having it be commitment-oriented is really powerful, I think, for business from a marketing standpoint. But then how do you train and teach and coach your people to express and articulate the commitment that you can express from a marketing standpoint. You know how to do that. That's what you do, right? So then how do you teach and train and coach your people to become commitment-oriented human beings? You know, that is the $64 million question. You know, and that's where I'd like to address that piece of it during our next podcast. You know, we'll really get into how do we teach and train and coach people how to express commitment day in and day out so they can actually literally be the brand. They could be this differentiator that you talk about. The employees. If you've got 100 employees, wouldn't it be nice if every one of your 100 employees could clearly articulate the brand? And they were literally being the brand.
How cool like it or not,
yeah.
The brand is the sum of the employees.
That's true. So that's the flip side, correct.
That's right. That's yeah. the way cultures operate inside a business. And if you could set the company from a strategic standpoint for success, and to be able to carve out a niche in the market and to be different and appeal to your target types of customers, to make it clear that this is the type of relationship we offer that then appeals to the type of customers you're trying to attract. So
yes,
that equation all starts internally. It starts with the commitment from the staff at the front counter. It extends right on through the shop. Anyone who interacts with that customer or their car.
They're all being the brand, yes.
That's right.
They're all being the brand, one way or the other. So the question is, what's the design? You know, when I talk about articulating commitment and you talk about, you know, being able to take this differentiator, you know, this commitment-oriented differentiator that you're going to, the company's going to adopt as their way to go to market. This is great, a really powerful conversation. What I'd like to do next time the next podcast is to talk about how we teach and train and coach people to become commitment machines in their personal lives, and then to carry that over into the business life. You know, so much to talk
about
here. Yeah. Neil, thanks so much for being a part of this podcast with me, and I look forward to having many, many more conversations with you about a variety of topics. Okay, buddy?
Dan, thank you.
You're welcome.
You for having me on.
All right. Be good, my friend. Ciao. Okay, guys, listen, that was great. I love chatting with Neil. He's really a first-class act and a great businessman, and I'm thrilled to have him as a part of my team and in my posse, if you will. I can't wait until next week, because what I want to talk about next week is actually how to become a commitment-oriented human being and what that means, and how to practice. Because ultimately, you're, like I said earlier, and what I learned over the last 40 years is that your ability to articulate your commitment is what determines your power while you're here on the planet. Right, that's the source of personal power. Your ability to articulate what you're committed to, right? In many areas of life, you know, it could be in the domain of health and fitness, and you know, in your home life, business life. There's many different domains of living, of course. But for you to become really, really, really powerful as a human being, you have to be able to express what you're committed to. So that's where we're going to leave it off right now today. I'm thrilled to have everybody here listening. And if you have any comments at all, please feel free to go to check us out at malloysales.com, and you can get in touch with me. And again, make sure to subscribe to these podcasts, and we'll be able to send you all the good information and good philosophy that we can get your way. Okay, so have a great week and talk to you next week.